Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Press One for Democracy. Thought I'd play us in with a little bit of new music there. I'm getting a little tired of my standard intro, so I thought we'd have a little fun and games with those early callers and add up see if somebody can name that tune. So I want to go for something a little bit mainstream, a little bit innocuous, just see, test your knowledge of music. We've already got a caller in queue, so I want to hurry through the old introductions, set up the show, and get on with it. So today's show is kind of inspired by a couple of different things. So last week, I know it, on Lunch with Loudon, Janine did a little thing on transpartisanship, and it's something that I've always it's actually what drew me to the coffee party in the first place. And so wanted to do kind of a little bit of an experiment today. So put the post out to preview the show, I wrote this very simple thing. Are you transpartisan and is the coffee party? Right? So I had a little interesting chat with some of my other folks and on the board of directors here and going back and forth about transpartisanship and, you know, how are we doing? I mean, it's not an easy thing, right? So, you know, basically what I wrote was this. Since its inception, the Coffee Party's mandate was to create a safe place where voices from all parties and all political philosophies could meet to discuss and find workable solutions to our common problems, right? So that right there is the crux of transpartisanship. It doesn't matter what party I come from. It doesn't matter what my philosophy is. It doesn't matter if I'm an independent, if I'm a green, if I'm a constitutionalist. It really doesn't matter. Let's all sit down and find out, you know, let's maybe put aside what we necessarily know we don't agree on, and let's find what we have in common, what is in our common best interest, and let's see if we can't find some solutions that everybody can agree on. So that was really the whole idea. So to accomplish this lofty goal, our membership makeup, that of the Coffee Party, really needs to include Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Tea Partiers, Greens, Libertarians, Socialists, Constitutionalists, Independents, obviously, and if I fail to Socialists, Communists, really doesn't matter, White Supremacists. As long as you can come to the table and you can look for common ground and you can respect what the other person's position is, right, or at least minimally listen to it respectfully and not respond in a harsh and uncivil manner, then that's transpartisanship at work. And as for my regular listeners, what they all know about me is that my belief is that if we're going to suffer under the yoke of the two-party system, and I don't really care for it, I don't like it, I don't think it's necessarily written in stone like a lot of people do, but if we are going to suffer under this yoke of a two-party system where people's ideas on different issues plant them on different areas or different at different places on the spectrum. If you look at that typically accepted spectrum of left v. right and as a continuum, I think most people find out that you can't nail them down to a specific position in total philosophically, because I think you find that people are all over the place. And one of the respondents, it was a perfect example on the Facebook page today. I talked about the fact that, and think about how many times you hear somebody say this, right? Because I think this is, of all the mixed messaging you hear, not that it's, again, mixed, but I mean, of all the mixed messaging you hear, I hear this more than anything. I'm social liberally, right? I'm liberally social, but I'm fiscally conservative, right? Or as I like to call it, stay out of my pocket, but stay out of my bedroom, but also stay out of my pocket. So, do you have a party? Do you have a place to go? Do you have candidates that are coming up here in 2014, and, you know, it's going to be really, the election season is going to be upon us in no time, you know, with the primaries starting up in the spring and, you know, then rolling into the November election cycle. You know, how do you judge your candidates, and how do they match up? But back to the topic, and get a little off there for a second. You know, so I asked the question, how are we doing? How are you doing? How are we doing? And to help us find out just how we're doing, I had a simple four-question survey, right? And I'm going to ask this of each of the folks that comes on as a caller tonight. So what political party do you belong to, if any? Do you regularly engage members of other parties in civil, fact-based political dialogue? If you don't, if you do, what topics do you agree on? And if you don't, what's stopping you? And let me start by giving this kind of a disclaimer, or I'll give you the ability to give an alternative answer. If you don't want to define yourself with a party, I mean, if you want to define yourself with a philosophy, so maybe you don't want to say you're Democratic, but you say, but in general, I'm progressive. If you want to go with progressive or conservative, you know, however you want to identify yourself. I mean, here I'm about no labels, but if somebody wants to put a label on themselves, right? So I'm, you know, that's cool by me. So as I like to say, no, you know, don't put labels on other people, but monikers are welcome, right? So monikers are those nicknames that we give ourselves. That's cool. If you want to self-identify and say, I'm a proud this or I'm a proud that, or I used to be this and now I'm that, well, that's fine. That's cool. Nobody should tell you what you are. You're the only one who should be able to say. So on this show, that's kind of the rule. Only you can tell us what you are. So then let's analyze the results, and let's see if we can't do something to improve these exchanges, and, you know, see what we can do to quiet the harsh rhetoric that, you know, has come to dominate our political landscape and our political discussions, and see if we can't actually, you know, kick it down a notch. Sorry, Emerald, we're gonna bang, kick it down a notch, so that we can have good, intelligent, honest discussions, and figure out how we can get somewhere. So, let me open up the phone to Bob Woodburn, because I know he's been waiting, and I also know he's exhausted from his holiday shopping spree up to the greater Bob, help me out here. Your mic's open. The Mall of America.
Mall of America.
That's it. I never forget the first time I went to Mall of America. So if you're not familiar, folks, the Mall of America is this insanely huge mall they built in Minneapolis, which, of course, has, you know, pretty darn frightening weather about 6 months out of the year. So they built this humongous mall, and they slapped an amusement park right in the middle of it with full-on roller coasters and all this stuff. And so it was really that was brilliant from a commercial standpoint, because you can go there, your kids can go on the rides and play all day while you go shopping, and you could enjoy a great day. All you have to worry about is getting from your car to the inside.
Yeah.
Well, and trekking the 500 miles you end up trekking all day.
I'm surviving. That's all I can say. The walk was beyond my wildest comprehension.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. Did your kids go on the rides?
Oh, the grandkids loved the rides. Yeah. Yeah, my kids didn't do much riding because there's an infant and 2 3-year-olds involved, so they had to be kept in check.
Understood, totally. Well, I'll tell you what, since I know it's getting late for you there in the great state of Iowa, if I read off these questions to you, we can get to the survey.
It.
Oh, you got them already. Go ahead.
I have all four of them, yeah.
Beautiful.
I don't belong to any political party officially, because there is only no party rather than independent in Iowa. Okay? That's number one. Number two, I do regularly engage members of other parties in either fact-based, civil or both political dialogue. It depends on how civil they are. I give as good as I get, and I'm usually pretty pointed in my remarks. As to the topics that I agree with other parties on, it would depend on the party, and I'm one of those people who monikers himself as a true social libertarian, fiscal conservative centrist. And I try to live within that ideology.
Social libertarian, say that again. Social libertarian.
Fiscal conservative.
Okay.
Okay, in other words, I don't mind spending money on legalized drugs if I need them. But don't ask me to buy them for you because you also have that liberty. How's that?
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really believe that the country has gone away from liberty first and pay for it second.
Could you expand on that a little bit, please?
Sure. When the country was first founded, you could do damn near anything you wanted as long as an army wasn't standing in your way.
Okay.
When the Redcoats had to get involved, you had trouble. But other than that, it was a free country. When's the last time you actually heard one of our fellow citizens say, "It's a free country, I'll do as I please"? I haven't heard that
phrase asking for
in
trouble.
About 12 years. Yeah.
Yeah, somebody looking for a fight.
I haven't heard that phrase since 9/11/2001, except by my own utterance just now.
Okay.
All right. Now, as far as agreeing on topics, it depends on which self-monikered individual I'm talking to as to what I agree on. Now, if we're talking bipartisanship rather than transpartisanship, the only place I can agree with Republicans on is the Second Amendment. I do not believe in gun control because it was done by the British and didn't succeed, and it was done by the Nazis and didn't succeed.
All right, so let me ask you this question. There's a lot of Republicans, a la Paul Ryan, that what's his phrase? I want it to be able to drown government in a bathtub. I want it to be so small, I want to drown it in a bathtub. Now,
Okay. Now
one of the things that those types of folks constantly talk about, well, they talk about a lot of different things and ways and parts of government that they'd like to see drawn in a bathtub. One of the things that Mansoor Gidfar, who's with Represent Us, pointed out to me, he said, with a guy like that, who's virtually a libertarian, right, he said, ask him about the war on drugs. Ask him about how much money this country has wasted on the war on drugs, and would you like to see the war on drugs end?
And he'll
would
tell
you like
you
to see
not.
The war on drugs end?
Me?
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And they can start with the war on smoking, because that one failed more times than I care to count since the reign of King James II.
Okay. But there and again, I know you're pressed for sleep, but I'd be interested if you got to hang around if we get somebody who's of that ilk on the phone, and
I'm reasonably well rested. My leg has been hurt.
Good. But
yeah.
Mansoor Gidfar is
sure. I took a nap so I could be here.
Thank you. I'm pretty sure you're going to end up agreeing on that with them. I think that's an idea that is, and you know, I mean, it's hard when you say Republican. it's kind of hard to say, well, what are we talking about, right? Because there's moderate Republicans like a Michael Charney, but then there's, you know, your more radical Republicans, and then, of course, there's your,
like,
you know,
Michelle
the Tea
Bachman.
Party Republicans. So
yeah.
It's funny. They've almost fractured more these days. I guess they are fractured more these days than Democrats are.
Yes,
Democrats,
they are.
I think, are divided into progressives and a lot, very super progressives, right?
Well, if I were to register as a Democrat, you'd need a third column.
Okay. Well, let's do this. Yeah. I've got who I believe is Neil from Florida holding on here. I want to bring him in here a second. So if you were talking to a Democrat, what would you agree on?
That the Ninth Amendment does indeed have penumbras and needs to be more than an ignored codicil to the Bill of Rights, because it's part of it, part and parcel.
Okay.
The Ninth Amendment is the personal liberty corollary to the Tenth, which is states' rights. The Ninth Amendment guarantees unenumerated rights, because they couldn't list all of the rights that would be conceivable that existed at that time and might exist in the future. But this we know. Tobacco has been the primary cash crop of the United States until illegal marijuana made the scene.
Okay.
Now, if you want to tell me that the framers intended a war on drugs or on tobacco, remind yourself how many of the framers were actually tobacco farmers, and also remind yourself that George Washington did indeed grow hemp.
Oh, you know me and my favorite thing, slippery slopes, right? So when you start talking about the founders, yeah, I mean, I am not one to deify the founders. I mean, you know, we could talk about hemp and tobacco and little things like that. We could talk about the fact that they owned slaves. I mean, these were not perfect people. So,
I don't deify them, but I know that when considering the Constitution, and you know me and the Constitution, okay, that is the closest thing this country has ever done that would get me to engage in hero worship for 55 people in Philadelphia, because against all odds, it happened, and it worked, and it's worked for well over 200 years.
Yep, absolutely. Well, listen, Bob, I'm going to leave your mic hot, and I'm going to bring in 954. It's a number I haven't seen in a while, but if I make my guess, 954, your mic is hot. Is this Neil?
It is.
Neil, that's how perfect. You been, man? It's been too long.
Yeah, I am. How you doing?
Good. Good. We've missed you.
Thank you.
So, did you happen to see the survey on the Facebook page this morning, or did you see it in the email blast?
I saw it in the email. I didn't see it on the Facebook.
Okay. All right. You want to shoot through it really quickly?
Well, I mean, I consider myself progressive. I vote Democratic. I mean, you can ask me the same questions or whatever question you want to ask. I believe in gun ownership. I do believe in background checks. There should be certain limitations. I don't think people should be able to have, like, grenade launchers and things that are dangerous, plutonium, things like that. But I do believe people who are responsible should be able to have firearms. I think people who are crazy, who go into schools and start shooting, should not have guns.
Okay. Well, hang on 1 second, Neil. We're going to get specific on that in a second. But if do you identify yourself as a progressive? And just out of curiosity, it's neither here nor there. Do you identify as a Democrat?
Yes.
Okay. So the other question. So the next question is: do you regularly engage members of other parties in civil fact-based political dialogue.
It's really hard to, because especially on Facebook, it's just everybody screaming and yelling, and it's very rare when I try to engage someone, but when someone I realize is not going to, it's not going to be a substantive discussion. They're going to call me names, or I disengage.
I got to say it is the downside, as far as I'm concerned, of net anonymity. You know,
yeah.
I call or is another phrase I use sometimes is keyboard guts. You know, I will say a lot of things. You know, well, I'm not me personally, but I think people will say a lot of things on a, you know, behind a keyboard or behind the internet that if they were face to face with you, they would never say to you. It's just my opinion. But do you ever engage in any live, conversations with friends or family?
Yeah, I've at work we've discussed. But once someone is so ingrained in the philosophy and the myth of Fox News, nothing I say to them. I mean, some people I will have a discussion with, we'll have a rational debate, and sometimes we'll just agree to disagree. But I do find that there's so much anger and finger-pointing and dehumanization, and I'm more patriotic than you, and my God is better than your God, and this and that, and it's just there's no real consensus of what I would call psychological balance, where we're all Americans, and I can disagree. My chiropractor is a Republican. We've discussed, but we've always remained civil. He doesn't call me names. I don't call him names. We agree to disagree on certain things. He's a Republican.
Is there anything specifically you agree on?
We agree that you know, in Jesus, we talk about Jesus a lot. We talk about patriotism. We talk about working together. Everybody should try to work, and everybody should contribute, and that we're all brothers and sisters in the great realm of things. If someone who's Republican is hungry, I'm going to feed them. I'm not going to say, oh, you voted for Mitt Romney, I'm not going to feed you. I'm going to feed you because that's my personal humanism, and that's completely separate from my politics. And we're all brothers and sisters. That's my mentality. I don't like people who lie. I don't like people who are hypocrites. But I basically, when it comes to caring about, you know, we're moving into the Christmas season. I care about everyone in this country. So it's like I'm just trying to help, you know.
I hear you, but I think that's a wonderful philosophy, and that's great. It's as many times as, and I'm sure this frustrates you, and I'm Jewish. I just tell you up front, I'm Jewish. But I mean, as many times as I see people, and it really, you know, I don't actually, now that I think about it, it's really not necessarily tied to one religion or another. But I mean, people who will, they'll either preach religion at you, and then the next thing they'll turn on and they'll do something that is totally against what they've just told you, right?
Well, I'll give you an example.
Or they'll use religion and they'll use it in a really weird, twisted way to prove themselves right. And you go, nah, that's not what the man was saying.
Well, look at that. The Republicans have attacked the Pope and called him liberal, and almost like they call him a Marxist and a socialist. They've also have taken food out of the mouths of seniors, children, and now 900,000 soldiers. I'm Jewish, but I believe in Jesus. Now, I've read both of the Old Testament and the New Testament. I've read both. The thing is this. Jesus is all about the poor, all about honesty. The Republicans have consistently filibustered every jobs bill. You can't yell, where are the jobs, while you're filibustering every jobs bill. In the last 4 years, there has been eight job bills specifically designed for veterans that they filibustered, and they've taken food out of their mouths while they're sitting there on Veterans Day saying, we have to celebrate our veterans. Now,
let me ask you this. Do you think that this is one of the reasons why they went to the point of putting it into the Bill of Rights and separating church and state and saying that the state cannot force you to practice a particular religion?
I think yes. They weren't perfect. They weren't deities, but yes, because religion to me equals, in a man's hands, religion means opportunism. opportunism means turning your back on your fellow man, which means greed. And greed is the complete opposite of the teachings of Christ. And I think that when you have your own religion, you have your choice of religion, it makes you more open-minded. You don't really fall apart into cognitive dissonance. When you have this much, it doesn't matter if you're a Christian, a Jew, or a Muslim, if you're a fanatical right-wing person, you can't even scratch the surface with them. It's like they believe what they believe, and it doesn't matter what evidence you give them, they will not listen. There's no rationality.
But in all fairness, Neil, and I heard you mention that before, when you talked about the fox mentality, right? Now, obviously, mm-hmm. They're the favorite whipping boy of the left. But I've met just as many people on the left who fall into a pattern of only using talking points. Whether it's the talking points that are coming out of the White House, whether it's the talking points coming off CNN, I mean, this whole idea of the talking points mentality, and I think this trickles, trickles down from what has become a we don't have time to educate ourselves electorate, right?
But
some people don't do it at all, and the people that do catch it in the 30-second snippets, and then that's all they know to repeat because they don't go and do additional research.
Well, that's the thing. I do additional research, and that's exactly what they want us to do because all networks are owned by six corporations, and a lot of them are laughing. They're like, yeah, we want them against each other, so basically the banks and the plutocrats can do whatever they want because they're really the major problem. You know, the Koch brothers, and they're more of a danger to both everyone than any, anything else. I mean, and they want us fighting each other, but when you look at how much poverty there is in this country, and I love my country, and you see how banks, the record profits, and how they all send the jobs overseas, and they're not paying any taxes because of the various loopholes, it's very disturbing. I research this. I constantly do research. I don't just put on MSNBC and listen. I look it up to back it up. I look up things. I look at Facebook, Google. I constantly am searching and researching and debunking. But the thing is, philosophy is one thing, but I don't think there should be hungry children in this country. I don't think that seniors should be struggling. I love my country, and people say, oh, you're not patriotic. No, I am patriotic because I care about this country. I think there should be living wage jobs. I think people should work hard, but people can't live on $7.25 an hour. They can't do it. It bothers me morally. It's not more that about – I'm more of a humanist than I am a Democrat, even though they'll call themselves – my uncle always instilled humanism to me because Jesus, regardless if you believe he was the son of God or a prophet, he was a humanist. And if he was here preaching today, all the plutocrats would be calling him a socialist, regardless of Democrat or Republican. They just –
No,
he's screaming at.
No, absolutely, I hear you, Neil. If you can stick around,
sure.
I'm going to go to mute you, but I've established your philosophy now, and if we get somebody coming from the other side, if you don't mind, I can bring you back
in, and we
could have a little tete-a-tete. One quick thing I might suggest that you try next time you run into a Republican is talk. The angle that I use with people that don't want to raise the minimum wage, which is something I'm totally for, if I get run into a Republican, I say, well, you know all that money that's going to food stamps to pay for people who, like, say, work for Walmart that can't make a living wage and so they're on assistance? Why don't we make that go away, reduce that debt from the government, and we'll put it on to Walmart, who can surely afford it? And which would you rather have paying that? They may fire back with you. You can't do that either. But if you had to take it out of one pocket or the other, can we agree that the Waltons who own they have more. The Waltons' combined wealth is more than the bottom 30% combined in this country. So the Waltons can probably afford it. So just a shot in the dark. 410, I'm going to get to you next, but I want to bring in somebody who's got limited time with us. I want to bring in Janine Loudon, just so she can whip me here for stealing her idea. And how you doing tonight, Janine?
I'm doing excellent, and I'm so flattered that you stole my idea. I mean, this has been my sort of issue in one form or another on our show for a while now, and it will continue to be when we resume December 12th. And I think you're brilliant for doing this. And, you know, I can answer the questions if you want.
I would love to. So but before you start, for those of you who might not know who Janine is, Janine is our executive director, which means she is the boss. We all snap to an attention and we salute her. She is also one of the Coffee Party radio hosts and has a show every Thursday called Lunch with Loudon, and that airs at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon on the Pacific Coast. And it's a great show and a fun show and a nice way to pass the day eating my lunch, which is what I usually do. So with that, Janine, go ahead. And you want me to read the questions to you, or you just want to go ahead and fire?
No, I'm multitasking on my tabs on the computer today. But by the way, happy Hanukkah. And then,
thank you.
You're welcome. So in terms of a party, this is a tough one because I've been a party bouncer for years. My husband swears that I was born a Marxist, you know, because that's like what shows up for me in terms of my sense of ethics a lot. But, you know, I would never say, I'm not a member of the Marxist Party, and I've never, like, delved into what that would mean if I said I was. I've been a libertarian. And I sort of walked away from that one when I saw people wanted things and didn't want to pay for them. It was an odd few years for me. But what I am now is a member of the Working Families Party, which is basically looking at, you know, the 99%, the issues of the 99%, and our desire to be self-sufficient, and that just like the law could be changed in order to make it impossible to be or difficult to be self-sufficient, the same laws can be changed back to make it possible so that food stamps and all these other, the social safety net isn't as taxed, just as you were referring to just now, Dan. So that's my party, and I'll cry if I want to. it's definitely a minority group.
And that's an Oregon-based party, correct?
No, it's national. It started in, I think, 1998. But Oregon has a strong working families party.
Okay,
and
cool.
So does New York, by the way. New York does, too. I could Google that while we're talking. It's, you know, it's kind of like a legitimizing the whole 99% concept. So
beautiful. So I know number two. We don't have to ask number two. Do you regularly engage in other parties in civil effect? I know you do that. I know you walk the walk and talk the talk.
Excellent.
If the party you're affiliated with is all about, I assume that's got a very progressive agenda.
Well, it's progressive, of course, is a relative term. I don't think having a living wage for a job is a progressive concept. I think it's regressive to think that you shouldn't. But, you know, I mean, Henry Ford kind of created this notion that, you know, I should build something that all my employees can afford to buy. And he did that both with the wages he paid and in the product that he built. And so this whole new planned obsolescence and perceived obsolescence strategy that's going on now and sending jobs away so that we can be consumers of disposable things, right? I mean, that's relatively new.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that nice? I mean, you know, my phrase, I mean, Henry Ford, there's a capitalist with a conscience. There actually was one. No, I say that facetiously because there are not very many these days, but I know there are many, but still it's unfortunately seems to be the exception and not the rule.
Well, I think that people like us, Dan, you're in business, I'm a retired business owner, I think people like us actually outnumber those creepy wealth builders, but we no intent to be, because I don't think that's a political statement, but maybe it is. It's just, I really mean creepy like a technical term, because it's amazing to me that there is no such thing as too much money for these guys, and that there is no length they will not go to. They used to be my competitors. You know, I mean, my market share for my little company rounded off to zero, because I was in the same boat with GE and Westinghouse and Bechtel and, you know, they were my competitors. And so, you know, there's still a lot of the real people out here who have these values, but the law isn't being manipulated by real people. The law is being manipulated by the wealth builders, and the guys who are cash heavy and who can afford the lobbyists. Because remember, for every dollar they spend in lobbying, they get over $200 in return. This is the best investment in America, is to hire a lobbyist. So, you know,
I'm saving up for one, and I did ask Santa for one for Christmas. Somebody to lobby for the coffee party. We'll see. So let me ask you this. So when you talk to Republicans, Republicans, Tea Party, whatever it is, what do you agree on? What do you find you agree on?
Okay, so I want to answer your question directly, and then I want to comment on the question itself. What everyone agrees on is that Congress is totally ineffective. Like, you know, and that money is playing a part in that. But ultimately, the bigger thing is that Congress is ineffective and is not representing we the people. Now, where the breakdown comes in, of course, is on why exactly. Because, you know, there are people who blame our president because a comet hit the sun. You know, there's just no dealing with those folks. But it is the thing we agree on, that Congress is not serving the needs of the people.
Well, and I think that's pretty reasonable coming, I mean, let's just say it tracks given the, what, maybe single-digit, sometimes double-digit congressional approval rating.
I think it's 8% today. I mean, it's like, that's like more people believe in, you know, that there are Martians and they've landed than believe that Congress is doing a good job.
Right. But when you ask them about their congressman, it's not their fault. No, they're great.
Well, I actually say that.
Well, right, but you live in Oregon, so you can mean it.
Right. No.
There's a little duck and beaver snobbery right there. We like our politicians up here. They're actually good guys. It's amazing that, I mean, 8%, and what I'm dying to find out is, and obviously we won't know until after the election, but what's the turnover going to be in the House? What's the turnover going to be of senators who are up for election? I mean, if 8%, if that's as good as it gets, then mathematically speaking, you could extrapolate that into the fact that we should have 92% turnover.
Well, if there wasn't such a thing as gerrymandering, and if there wasn't such a thing as third-party organizations who can say anything they want on TV under the shield of political speech and, you know, say slanderous and libelous things about each other, I mean, it's not like the playing field's not level. And so the logical thing doesn't always happen. If the logical thing happened, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now. So,
I suppose that's what we need
to talk about, right? And we talked about talking points earlier, because the biggest barrier to our having these conversations are the talking points. And it's almost to me like talking points are like when Harry Potter and Voldemort try to kill each other with sister wands, you know? There's all kinds of sparks and flashes, but there's no results. And so it's like talking points are a way of preventing outcome. Results, and they are the bane of social discourse.
Yeah, I know you guys call them code words.
Yeah, well, there's too many code words. For one thing, I step in them because I have no idea what they are. I have to do all kinds of research. But the other thing is that you use the term slippery slope. There's all kinds of slippery slopes. There's all kinds of mischief, you know, logical, rhetorical mischief in talking points, no matter who gives them. You know, some are more vettable than others, you know what I'm saying, in terms of could they stand the truth test. Like, I've been saying for a long time, if people were against abortions, they should not buy anything from China, because China has a very clear limited child law, and people, you know, terminations are all but publicly mandated, and, you know, they have the highest abortion rate in the world. So if you are going to, You know, and that's just, there's truth, truth, truth here. Fact, fact, fact. And I saw a little meme today that said, hey, if Hobby Lobby really cared about pregnancy, they wouldn't buy 95% of their stuff from China. So, yay, it's gotten through. But it still becomes, it evolves to a talking point, and then it's no longer valid.
Yep. No,
so
So
even the truth gets denigrated by these things, and that's why conversation, as opposed to, you know, pointing our wands at each other and going, you know, talking points, is really, really important.
Yep. And the fact of the matter is, as long as we're sitting there pointing our wands at each other,
mm-hmm.
we're not paying attention to what's going on around us. We are so laser focused on each other. And so you talk about the little mischief makers and, you know, all the people with their, you know, with their lobbyists and all their people, you know, it's like they profit from the chaos. To me, the analogy is like, and it just doesn't work with younger people so much, because every Bond movie that I remember as a kid always had the same idea. The bad guy would make two ships. One would be a U.S. ship and one would be a Russian ship. And he would then send the Russian ship, and he would mess with the U.S., and he'd send the U.S. ship and mess with the Russians, because the whole plan was that they would then fight each other, and in the ensuing chaos, you know, their organization would profit, right? I mean, and that's to me, that's the game plan. Keep us at each other's throats, and then they can just do whatever they want, because we're just too busy looking at each other.
Well, and even this, remember I said I was going to comment on the question itself, and even the question itself, what do you say when you talk to a Republican? Well, I have no problem talking to a Republican, but I have degrees of problem of people that call themselves Republicans, you know, because there are the Tea Party people, and there are like five flavors of Tea Party, and I mean, I've been doing serious research into this and interviewing people, you know, and so there's like five levels of, or different kinds, absolute different, unrelated Tea Parties, except they kind of fall under the banner of Tea Party. And then way over here on the right, there are these folks that are called Dominionists, which are the, you know, religious right, extreme religious right, and they hide behind the name Tea Party, and they hide behind the name Republican, and they're really neither, you know. And so here's my question to you, and maybe it's something the rest of your guests can talk about, but this is an enduring question for me in my latest inquiry, you know, about who is it that I'm actually talking to? And can I know who I'm talking to if they say I'm with the Tea Party, right? How do we have civil and factual conversations that get to the heart of who are you and what do you want? You know,
I think you're going down the only path that there is, and that is you have to kind of have some litmus test. I know that's I don't want to use that because I hate that when the senators do it. And they have their litmus test questions, like when they're affirming a judge or they're affirming a presidential nominee. You know, they talk about their litmus test questions, but I think you have to have them, because I agree with you. And one of the things that really frustrates me about the whole Tea Party bit is this: the original Tea Partiers, I think have a ton in common with Democrats and a ton in common with progressives. And they were that whole movement was hijacked by the Sarah Palins of the world and the Barbara Bachman of the world, or not Barbara, but what's
her name? Michelle,
thank you. I was thinking Boxer and Bar. Again, my Boxer and Bar. Yeah. Anyway, but they hijacked that whole thing. That was not what the original Tea Partiers were all about at all. And you and I know this very well from talking to guys like John Cashin, who were originally with the Tea Party, who said, wait a second, this isn't it. This isn't what we're about. What are you doing? And they eventually left. But those people were the ones who really stay in the Tea Party, and you're right. And a comment I made earlier, maybe before you joined, was that the Republican Party is now way more fractured than the Democratic Party, way more fractured. They used to be the lump of, you knew what these guys were about. Now you have no idea. So you're right. I think the only way to do it though is you have to have some litmus test questions. And, you know, are you for big government, small government? Are you for, you know, drown the baby in the bathwater government? They're just reducing the debt. You know, I mean, you kind of have to, you have to ask. And it makes it all the more difficult. I mean, in a perfect world, right, and I think I wrote this in response to somebody who actually said this, in a perfect world, there would be no parties, right? There would just be none. We'd just all be citizens out to do the best thing for the best, you know, for everybody. Because once you can put a label on somebody, then you can pigeonhole them, and I'd say almost 99% of the time people get it wrong.
Yeah, and that's not good for discourse.
Right.
And certainly discourse has a purpose, though. I mean, ultimately, we're not always going to agree about everything. But at least I would know what it is I agree or don't agree with. And the other thing is, I think that there are factions at work in this country that are dangerous. And this is, you know, it's my humble opinion. And, you know, I mean, the Southern Poverty Law Center has been following radical right militias for, 25 years? It's not like everybody that you talk to is equally valid in terms of their integrity about telling you what it is they really want. And so most demeanists only say to each other, we want the government to collapse so that we can rebuild it with a Bible-based constitution, right? But that is the definition of a demeanist. And lots of people fall into that pigeonhole if you do your deep research. But they don't think they need to tell you the truth. And so sometimes these conversations can be very uncomfortable, right? I mean, if you have a deep and abiding disdain for women or people of color or immigrants or, you know, if you really have that deep and abiding disdain, it is genuine, it is honest, and we have to ask ourselves, what do we do when we have that fundamental disagreement? And I think the kind of transpartisanship we're talking about is how you get to the point of having authentic conversations that require self-examination on the part of all speakers, right? But these are serious times. I mean, when the Congress is in the hands of people who can fund lobbyists, basically, and all of us know it, and we still can't do anything about it, what's going on?
Well, I prefer to think we can, we just haven't figured out what. I think too many people have just become entrenched in their own philosophies. And, yeah, I mean, even if they have those conversations, it becomes a matter of, yeah, but are you coming into it really with an open mind, or are you coming in it just to confirm what it is that you think already and to tell anybody that thinks otherwise they're idiots? You know, I mean, is there real, honest, intellectually honest conversations happening? Because those are the only ones where there's room for learning and room for change, right? It's got to be intellectually honest, you know, because otherwise it's just like, you know, okay, you go into your corner, the bell will ring, come out boxing. And it's like, no, I'm just going to try. I'm here to pummel you. So I think that's the key. And, you know, I so much love our time together, Janine. I've got three or four other people in queue, and I know
I'm pressed for time as
well. Oh, no, don't worry about it. It's been wonderful. It's been fun. But I've been promising 410 to get to them, and then I see 770, which is either my friend Bobby or my friend Patrick, so I do need to scoot. But leave your mic open if you'd like.
I'm out of time, but thank you very much. And carry on, y'all. This is the conversation that will make a difference.
Thanks, Janine. Appreciate it. That was Janine Loudon, Executive Director of the Coffee Party. And 410, I've just opened your mic. Without further ado, who do we have the pleasure
of
speaking
with? Hello, everyone. Happy Hanukkah. This is Alan.
Oh, and happy Hanukkah to you. I'm sorry,
Alan in Maryland. Do you want to ask
Alan, how are you,
questions?
Sir?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
I'm ready to answer
you
your
survey
questions.
Absolutely.
If you like. Yeah.
Absolutely. So what political party do you belong to, if any?
The Tax Wall Street Party.
the Tax and Wall Street Party. Okay. It sounds like a grassroots movement that's starting with you.
Next question.
Do you regularly engage with members of other parties in civil, fact-based political dialogue?
Well, I talk with you guys, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's
okay,
fact-based
that counts.
Dialogue right there. Yeah, it counts.
Okay. When you do talk with to people who have who you might consider your political opposites, right? What topics do you agree on? Now, for you, I'm going to guess that would be a Republican or a Tea Partier.
Well, I try to find unity on a particular angle, and I disengage on a different angle.
Issues, though, that you agree with them on?
Yes.
And what would those be?
Well, I want to work to take political power. I want to team up with people to the country's a mess. And, you guys have discussed, laws have to change. There's bad laws in effect when you have to make better laws. Well, in order to do that, we have to take political power. And I want to team up with all comers to do that. But I will not tolerate budget-cutting austerity because it just plain kills people. Won't it make any appeasement to a budget-cutting agenda or in a destruction of the safety net? Won't do it.
All right. So if that topic comes up,
well, a Tea Party.
How do you get past that to the stuff you agree on? I guess is what I'm getting at.
Well, remember how they used to be against the TARP. As you guys were discussing, the Tea Party types around 2008, 2009, around the same time the Coffee Party got going, was a response to the bailout of Too Big to Fail. And people were up in arms about that. But the Tea Party got commandeered. Now, so if I'm talking to a Tea Party who's got some connections into that activity from 2008, 2009... I can talk to him about taxing Wall Street. I can talk to him about, your Ron Paul friends want to end the Federal Reserve, and we say, no, we need to nationalize the Federal Reserve. So we can argue a little bit there and see if we can get, see if there's some rationale in their heads.
Nationalize the Federal Reserve, I just want to make sure exactly what you're proposing.
Okay, I've got a good example for you. Elizabeth Warren came out with a piece of legislation. She called it Bank on Students. Remember this? She talked about giving college students loans at the discount Federal Reserve window at a rate of 0.75%. In other words, if the Wall Street bankers can get that kind of money overnight or, to go swindle the country with their derivative speculation, why can't students get the same rate?
Okay. So you're basically saying is remove the middleman, remove the banks, do direct lending from the Fed to people.
It's that and more. President Obama could call up the Federal Reserve chairman and say, I need you to open a discount window and make a tender call to all the states of the union to purchase their bonds, and the bonds could be infrastructure bonds. They could be called century bonds, and you could create the magnetically levitated trains that I've talked about. You could the infrastructure in the country's falling apart. You've got trains falling off the tracks. You've got water mains breaking left and right. The engineers gave the country a report card that we failed. They gave us a D-. Remember this?
Yep.
Okay. Well, we need to address that. And if the only place the money is piling up is in Walmart or Koch Brothers or other places like this, the so-called 1%, remember I discussed with you, I called it a capital strike. They're hoarding the cash. They're not recirculating the currency into the economy. Well, If that's the case, then the Federal Reserve cranks out low-interest loans to infrastructure projects, and you put millions of people back to work. So I speak about this kind of stuff to the liberals, the progressives, the Democrats, you know, all people, really. And I'm trying to engage them in working to create a united front. One of the reasons I was talking to you guys was because I knew you were very much interested in engineering a fight against the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So how can you have a manufacturing base in your country if you've got radical free trade, you know, with, you know, ripping down all your tariffs and bringing cheap goods into the country from slave labor abroad? Can't be done. So it's not a revenue tariff I want. I want a protectionist tariff. So when I engage
that's very interesting. And this is something phenomena I have observed and pointed out for years is that, you know, people will be all up in arms about things of that nature, and then the next thing you do is you'll see them walking into a discount store and buying everything that's foreign made, and it's it's like they don't even understand that. I mean, so it's not that people vote against their self interest. Sometimes people shop against their self interest, and they don't get it. And then I have this thing, a kind of a fictitious story or a hypothetical on my website that talks about this circular about this guy who is working for a manufacturer or a tool and die shop that makes tools or, you know, that makes dies for this and that, the other thing, and it goes all the way around. But then he goes to, you know, Walmart, and he shops and he demands the cheap prices goods at cheap prices, and then that Walmart, you know, drives the manufacturer's price down, and then they say, forget it, I'm just going to China, and the next thing you know, the guy's laid off, and it's like he just laid himself off. I know that was a little circuitous and not very – but you see what I'm saying?
No,
I do. It's like he caused his own demise because he wouldn't, you know, pay a little bit more for something maybe made locally, right? Or he wouldn't pay for a local – you know, he doesn't go to the local hardware store. It also works with, like, the local hardware store. He drives past the local hardware store and, to Home Depot and buys everything at Home Depot, and then the local hardware store goes out of business. And, you know, the ramifications of that. I mean, and that's, you know, transpartisanship works best locally. You know, sometimes it's hard to get people to agree on national level things because the scope is too big and the effects are there's 310 million of us. So if the effect is distributed across a large number of people, then it's a small effect. But sometimes when you get down to the local level, you know, it can have huge effects. And all the things you're talking about with infrastructure, that's exactly it. I mean, you know, it's hard for me to feel your pain if, you know, your local community has to float a bond to redo, you know, 1,000 miles of sewer pipe that have just been decayed and that are now, you know, not working.
The century bonds is you make them for 100 years, and it's a 0% loan from the Federal Reserve. They create the credit out of thin air and extend it into the economy, and you create millions of jobs building this infrastructure you need. That's an issue in itself right there. But I have a challenge for you, Dan.
Okay.
That you and your fellows at the coffee party and Blog Talk Radio really take charge of the fight against the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But picking up on what Eduardo had spoke of last week, you know, how do you trust the fellow standing next to you in the voting booth? Well, the fellow in question that you were describing that voted against his own self-interest was never educated about the American system and what a protectionist tariff really means.
Right. No, I hear you, Neil, and
so
it is on the agenda for it's on the agenda for Wednesday's call, Wednesday's board of directors call. I'm asking that we take an official stance against it at two levels. One that is the transparency issue, and then the second one is just the content of it itself. But you know, we have to at least demand transparency, and then if we can't, and then once we get that, we can fight against all the things we know are in there that are horrible, right? So,
okay, second part of the challenge.
Okay.
The upcoming election
in 2014.
Then I've got
to get on to another caller, but go ahead.
I'll make it short.
Okay.
The elections in 2014 must be made to be about increasing the minimum wage. In other words, you have to drive people to the polls and make the election all about we don't get paid enough. And that's the only. And if we can do that, it doesn't matter who gets elected, they'll have a mandate not to tolerate any further budget cuts. They'll have a mandate to actually have a discussion on these types of things like the century bonds. And we can shut down the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We can help the Republican Party eat itself if we can drive the people to the polls saying, I demand a higher wage. We have to make the 2014 election all about and nothing but we demand more money in our households.
All right.
That's the challenge. I'm throwing that challenge in your lap, Dan, and all your other friends on your blog talk radio, you know, production staff.
Okay.
That's my challenge to you guys. Trans-Pacific Partnership and make the 2014 election about raising the minimum wage. If it has to be done at state level, county level, municipal level, whatever.
Right. Okay. I appreciate the call as always, Alan. Thank you very much. And frankly, that the minimum wage is already, I think there's 6 ballot initiatives in states. I know that there's some states that have already passed it. I believe California's already raised it. So, and I want to say New Jersey, it's on the ballot or it's been raised. Somebody will correct me, probably my next caller here at 770. But before I get to you, 770, hold on 1 second. Since we're at the bottom, or at the back at the top of the hour, I should say, I need to take care of a little coffee party business. First of all, the coffee party is a non-profit, not-for-profit organization, and we were not helped by Citizens United. We do not have big PACs and big, you know, chunks of money flowing in from either left or the right. So we rely on donations. So if you like what we're doing and you like what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more of it and see more of it and see more actions out of the coffee party, please go to www.coffeepartyusa.com and you can click on the big red donation button. If you don't want to become a member, of course, we'd love to have you as a member. And you can become a member either with a one-time annual fee, or you can be a sustaining member, and you can give as little as $5 a month or $10 a month or as much as you'd like. You can give $1,000 a month. That's fine as well. But the more money we have, the bigger our reach can get, and the more actions we can get involved in changing government and running money out of politics and defeating things like the Trans-Partisan Pacific Partnership and fixing the tax code and doing all the kinds of things that the vast majority of Americans want. And that's really the key, folks. I mean, you know, I like to focus on the things that we agree on. That's what the show's on all about tonight, transpartisanship, you know, looking past our labels of whatever our parties are, what our philosophies are, sitting down with people and discussing issue by issue, finding the places where we have common ground, finding the places where we agree, and then driving Washington to actually do what we want instead of what Janine referred to as the lobbyists, of course, want, and what the Alex of the world want, and getting government actually to come back to the people. And the other thing I need to tell you about is just the other Coffee Party radio shows, because I am only one of many, right? On Tuesdays, although on a hiatus temporarily, we have the Middle Ground, with this typically hosted by our glorious president, Eric Beiler. Yeah, not Barack Obama, but Eric Beiler, award-winning filmmaker who's been actually doing a brilliant film focusing on the voter suppression laws and the fight against voter suppression laws that are going on specifically in North Carolina. And on Thursdays, we have lunch with Loudon. You heard from Janine Loudon earlier today. And Janine's on at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, every Thursday. So grab a nice bowl of soup or whatever your favorite lunchtime snack is and have lunch with Loudon. And then on Saturdays we have on Saturdays we have Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis. And Egberto's on from 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a couple of hours in a fun roundtable discussion. And then we have a new program that starts on Sunday. Sundays at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that's Progressive Politics Tennessee Style. And that's a brand new show, and I haven't had a chance to listen to it, but I've got to get to the archives and start listening to it as well. So there's your Coffee Party radio lineup. Of course, you're listening to Press One for Democracy. We're here every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with a host of friends. And just so you know, since I haven't said it today, if you are listening and you can hear my voice, this is a call-in show. Nobody wants to hear me chat for 2 hours. So if you want to get in on the action, call 646-929-2495. And when the nice little English lady tells you to, you press 1 and then your little hand goes up on the electronic board and I can then bring you into the conversation, which I am about to do right now with area code 770. Is this Mr. Rodrigo? 770,
This is not my friend Rodrigo. This is Patrick, the other guy.
I see 770 and for some reason, I don't know why I always think it's him. Maybe it's because you've been not around a lot lately, Patrick. How are you?
Been working on things. Yeah, this is Patrick Thompson from the Smarter Than Alec Party.
From the which party?
The Smarter Than Alec Party.
Smarter Than Alec Party. So yeah, just so you don't know, since I'm being a little familiar with Patrick. Patrick, this is Patrick Thompson. He lives in the suburbs of Atlanta. And he has been a candidate, and I guess will be a candidate again in 2014 for Congress.
I will be a candidate again.
And that's the 7th district?
11th.
I'm sorry, 11th, Georgia 11th.
U.S. House. So, and if I could run without a party, I would. It's impossible. I am the trans party thing is probably a good topic because I'm really put out with parties. It's a corporate system, it's a corporate media where we're not getting the education that we need. And to give you a good idea, we recently held a healthcare conference here because our legislators are holding back in Georgia, no Medicaid expansion. They're still fighting Obamacare. With every breath. I'm in the home of the National Tea Party. The National Tea Party chairperson lives in my county. So there's a bunch of shenanigans that go on. A lot of it is caused by corporations. It's not caused. I don't blame the poor people that are following this Tea Party Pied Piper. It's really these corporations are paying for this constant barrage of misinformation. So a bunch of us got together and decided to have a healthcare conference. We said, look, who could we invite? We just want to have this open discussion and actually help people understand. So this was about a month ago. So before, you know, healthcare.gov and all the things that have happened, but we just really wanted to make sure that people knew how to sign up, that they got their questions answered. We purposely invited young people. We invited people that were going back to college. Either they were adults or they were kids, and they were going into a healthcare profession so that we could talk about the money that would be available for grants or expanding programs, expanding Medicare, expanding all kinds of healthcare programs. So in other words, a jobs growth program. We invited doctors to speak, people in the medical profession. We had doctors who wrote the Affordable Care Act. As part of the discussion, we had doctors from Physicians for a National Health Care Plan who spoke and why the movement to a true single payer would be a better idea. They have all the economics. They had the Georgia Center for Public Policy here who had the facts on what healthcare does to your economy. We had ADP, because we're the home of ADP here in Atlanta. We had ADP come and speak to small business. How do you prepare your business for the new rules and regs, whatever? It was a true nonpartisan thing. It was supposed to be that way. We rented a facility. So in other words, we took money out of our pocket to rent a nice facility. And a healthcare, it was actually one of the hospitals has a community center. It's like a community center. You might ask, why is a hospital, what's the hospital doing in a community center business? That would be another question. That's how much profit they make, that they have this corporate center.
which hospital? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So
which hospital? I'm just curious.
Northside.
Okay.
Northside Hospital. So we had lots of people. And I invited people like the universities here because they're all growing because, you know, they all have healthcare professions that are growing. We're the home also of Life University, which is the chiropractic, National Chiropractic University. Again, preventative medicine was a big thing. The people were awesome. The people who came, I had senior citizens here who were, I was like, you know, what are you doing here? You don't need this. And they were like, no, I'm here because of my kids. My kids are in their 40s. My kids are in their 30s, whatever. They've got children, and they need to know what to do. And I'm here because they can't be here. I mean, the stories were just amazing. I met young people who had one accident and were faced with $100,000 in bills. And just, I mean, it was a great kind of people thing. And we made it non-party. We said, look, this is not a Democratic Party thing. This is for everybody. Come out and join us. Because of the area I'm in, we had to hire police because I will have yoo-hoos who come with their guns, and they might use them. So we had to check your guns at the front. I did have people bring guns, and they checked them at the front. I had an army of Tea Party people. We had two sessions, one in the afternoon and one at night. Tea Party showed up in droves, T-shirts on, matching shirts and banners and so what makes it in the paper? We had invited the newspapers and radio and TV, hoping that they might cover it to say, look, you know, we're just trying to get information out there because I don't know if you know it or not, but our insurance commissioner, our state insurance commissioner, is on record going to Republican meetings and talking and bragging about how he's stopping Obamacare.
Time out. Now, when I left there, it was Considine. That doesn't sound like him.
No, it's not Austin Dine. It's a new guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to say we used to have the greatest. We used to have the two best things that they used to have in Georgia government was our insurance commissioner and the woman who ran our lottery, which is why the Hope Scholarship came about and how so many kids more kids get to go to college now in Georgia. So
exactly.
Okay.
So you got the picture here. We had national. I mean, I'm talking national talent, and our goal was to shed some light on this dark corner of Georgia, because this is not the Democrat. If you go down to Atlanta, there's meetings all the time about the Affordable Care Act, and you can get this guy and that guy to come speak. I mean, we're up in a darker corner, and just trying to put a little light on the subject and trying to get people the education they need. I had people here who were involved in the sign up, the navigators. I had them here to help people go through the sign-up process and understand how to do it. I mean, we were just offering a public service, basically, which why are we doing? I shouldn't have to be doing this. This should be done by my local governments, but it's not because they're all fighting it. But again,
well, so let me ask you this question. So you said you do have a party that you have to run on. So you're running with which party?
Democrats.
Okay. So when you obviously on the ACA, there's not going to be a whole lot of agreement. If you talk to Tea Parties or Republicans, they're still trying to kill it. We know that for sure. Do you ever have conversations with them on other subjects where you do find agreement?
I don't have that many Republicans that are fighting it. I have Tea Partiers that are fighting it, but I don't have that many Republican friends understand what it's all about. And they understand that we have a huge health care problem here in Georgia. So, and how it's related to so many other problems. It's not the Republicans that I necessarily have, you know, odds with. It's the Tea Party and it's the corporations that are behind the Tea Party. But there are certainly other topics that you know, across party lines on, you know, poverty, and which is rampant in Georgia, education. It is odd that we fund our brightest students on a lottery system, so we gamble so that our brightest students can have an education. And that's another thing that used to be needs-based when it started. I think when you were here, it was needs-based. It's turned into a free-for-all. So, you know, I can be a well-to-do, you know, millionaire son or daughter and go to school on a scholarship paid for by lottery money. It's now based on grades. So we recently had to fight it because the tech schools were given a mandate where because it's now based on grades, well, a lot of tech school students are, you know, it's a harder student, and many of them are working as well, working men and women. Some of them have families. It's hard to make, you know, a 4.0 or a 3.8. I mean, it gets really infinitesimal. It's hard to make that. And we're trying to make it go back to a needs-based type of scholarship. Because when you just make it based on a number, well, anybody can get it. And then so a lot of people don't really need it. And we now even have competing states. We have a ton of students going to school, like, for example, in Alabama, to go to Auburn or University of Alabama, because they will honor our scholarship here. So if you make it here, they will honor that in their state. So it's not like we're keeping students here. And then the Hope scholarships that we have, the people who go to school here, they go wherever the job is, and it's probably not going to be in Georgia. So we just recently had our baseball team, for example, move from the city of Atlanta, and they made an announcement to move to Cobb County, which is a fine thing to do. It's a private group. They can do what they want to. However, taxpayers got to pay $300 million to make that happen. And they did it without asking taxpayers. They just kind of said, we're going to do it. Hey, Board of Commissioners voted for it. They did it. They voted on it within a week. Within a week.
Now, I got to tell you, since you haven't been on for a while, I actually took a business trip a couple of weeks ago, and I ended up sitting next to Jeff Foxworthy on the way back. Oh, yeah, amazing coincidence. But we actually talked about that, and I said, this is amazing to me. I said, because I lived in Chicago, and the White Sox threatened to leave and go to become the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. And they said Tampa was wooing us, and they want us to come down, so build us a stadium. They floated it as a referendum in Chicago. Now, this is the old Comiskey Park, right? I mean, this thing was built back in the early 1900s, never really renovated, not kept up at all like Wrigley has been. And, I mean, this thing is falling down. And then the referendum came back straight up no, of course, in Chicago, because by then most of the people had migrated to the north side. There were Cubs fans that could care less. They said, forget it, go. And then, of course, you know, a month later, they're saying they're going to go ahead and they've approved the building of the new stadium. And people were like, wait a second. So I understand that they took referendums and or polls, and it, like, got defeated three times. Is there any truth to that?
Absolutely. The public is, you know, they may not be so much against it. It's just that they didn't ask anybody. They just and they're spending our money and didn't ask. That's just
well, and this is
not
the amazing thing, right? So that just so everybody has perspective that might not know the history of Turner Field, the Atlanta baseball stadium, and that is this was the Olympic stadium that was built for the 1996 Olympics, right? So this wasn't something like Comiskey Park that was built like in 1896. Well, I don't know if it's that old, but I mean, it wasn't 100 years old, dilapidated, falling down. This is a beautiful stadium that's less than 20 years old. And now they're going to move. Now that, right. And they're going to spend $300 million to do it. If I'm a citizen of Atlanta, I don't know. I'm not happy. I mean, what happens to that stadium? What are they going to do with it? The old Turner Field.
I thought they may keep it for one of the colleges, like Georgia State, for example, that's downtown. They're like, no, we're tearing it down.
They're tearing it down.
Tearing
unreal.
It down.
Well, you know that. Yeah, there yeah. should be a way for citizens to stop that. That's ridiculous.
I think there's going to be some lawsuits, but this just goes to the corporate control of our parties, the corporate control of our legislators. And that is a total corporate play, and they're playing with our money. So same thing is happening in the state. There's a lot of big tax giveaways. You know, the only way they have of attracting companies here is to give away resources, give away taxes, you know, give tax breaks. It's basically corporate welfare for these large companies who really don't need it. And they, if you ask them if they would come here without it, and they'd say, yeah, we're coming here for the educated people that are here. We're coming here for the port that's nearby, the airport that's here, what you name it. They don't really want the tax break, but we're just giving it away without even asking. And they don't ask taxpayers. They just do it. So that's the kind of thing we're fighting against. We recently had a ruling as well on solar, because I'm big into solar, and the state is not. Georgia Power controls that, because they like to burn things, and they want to see biomass take off. Well, most of the forests here in the state are private, on private land. So when they talk about burning trees, mixing with coal and burning it as biomass, they talk about that being green. Well, it's not green. It still makes, still puts stuff up in the air. And they're buying forest land from private owners who have no rules and regulations about water use or soil erosion or any of that stuff. It's just, I'm going to grow trees and sell them. So there isn't a lot of regulations there. So recently we tried to get some solar stuff in the mix, and we did get some help from the Tea Party out of nowhere. Tea Party came up and said, hey, that doesn't sound right. You mean that I'm only allowed to buy power from Georgia Power and I can't buy from anywhere else, and they set the price? Boy, that got them going. They really didn't like the anti-competitive take in that. And so we did have some odd fellows here in the state, Sierra Club mixed with Tea Party, trying to help Georgia Power get more solar. Once they broke Georgia Power, and they did have to start putting in some solar reserves, then Georgia Power said, we'll do that, but we're going to charge people who use solar, we're going to charge you more for your electricity because you're stealing from somebody else. This is another one of the ALEC things that's going around. This is a legislative exchange. Arizona recently.
Yeah.
Arizona of all places. They're trying to pass the same thing here, which is, you know, we're going to charge people more. If you're not going to play by our corporate rules, we're going to make you pay. So that's the general thing we're fighting here in Georgia is that I think we have some hope here in Georgia. You may have seen we have Michelle Nunn, famously of the Nunn family, long-term congressman here in Georgia. That's just her. This is his daughter who's running now.
Oh, Sam Nunn. Yeah, sure.
Sam Nunn. So she is running for Saxby Chambliss is leaving. Is one of our two congressmen. So he's leaving office this year. There's a big fight over that. The guy I ran against last time, Phil Gingrey, Dr. Phil, and about six other Republicans are running for that spot. Michelle's up there by herself. We also now have a hole for our governor. Our governor's done some very unethical things and hasn't gone to jail for it yet, but, you know, he's pretty close to the McConnell territory in Virginia. He just hasn't been investigated here. It hasn't happened yet. I think it's going to happen. If that happens, then I think you'll see John Barge, who's the our education board director for the state, run for the Republican spot. We already have Jason Carter, who is Jimmy Carter's grandson, who is now...
Wow, really?
He won a Senate seat last year, so he has now put his name in for governor of Georgia. So you're starting to see some change here because people are just fed up. Because nothing's getting done, and actually things are going backwards.
So how do we turn it around?
Yeah, but it's starting to turn, but it is, I think, all about corporations. And I really, I've talked about this before. I do believe that a big part of our problem is our media. The media is just not, especially when there's been a lot of reflection recently on the Kennedys and President Johnson and so forth, and you just compare the media to that time frame. The media was not corporate-owned then, and it was on the side of the citizen. They were bringing up issues for the citizen. Now it's all bleached. It's all bleached for the corporations, and because they're all owned by corporations. They can't say this. They can't talk about that. They never talk about the people. No. That's my biggest hang-up. I don't think we can be a free society without a free media, and we definitely don't have that today.
All right. Well, we're going to keep this media free.
Right.
We're going to keep letting people have their say, and we're going to keep letting folks get out there and letting people know that there are alternatives and that hopefully we'll just keep pushing and pushing and pushing until people come around and figure it out.
Right on. You're doing the right thing. Keep it up.
All right. Thanks, Patrick. Appreciate your time as always.
Thanks, Matt.
All right. That's Patrick Thompson from Georgia's 11th Congressional District. Patrick, just to give you a little bit of a background, worked in the computer field for years and years and years, and then he just got fed up one day and said, you know what, I've got to run for Congress. And he's sits in one of the most conservative districts, maybe the most conservative district in Georgia, certainly one of the most conservative districts in all of the country. And he just feels it's a civic duty to get out there and let people know that there are alternatives to the far right, the far, far right, the far, far, far right, and the farthest right, because I think that's pretty much who he runs against every year. So God bless you, Patrick, and keep up the good work. I'm going to bring in a friend of the show, Greg Rusick, now from 412, coming from Pittsburgh, where we won't talk about football because we don't want Greg to get upset.
There's not a lot to talk about this year. How are you doing, Dan?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. So you are one of our more extreme listeners, and I like it. I enjoy your passion. I like it too much because we usually end up on mostly on the same side of most issues, but. But you're a little outspoken about your dislike for the rhetoric of the other side. So you mind shooting through the survey questions with us?
Not at all. The answer to the first question is that ever since I've been registered to vote, which is when I turned 18, I've been registered nonpartisan. I do regularly engage with members of parties, I guess you could say, both of them. All of them, and I actually enjoy that sort of fact-based dialogue when it is fact-based. And I'm not much like my friend Bob. I'll throw the gloves off too, and it doesn't take a lot to get me to do that either, because I am pretty passionate about the some of the things that I think are happening in the country today, mostly out of bad information, misinformation, lies, and willful ignorance. Because if you're ignorant about the issues today, it's on purpose. You have to want to avoid facts. They're there. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I try to keep my conversation and my positions based on facts. They're not hard to find. If I can find them, anybody can. We do agree.
Yeah, so your scoop it page, the tagline is did you check first, right?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure I got that right.
Yeah, that's my blog page. That's my Scoop It page. And frankly, you know, it's the tagline under it really is, it's fine to have an opinion, but it's better to know the facts. And I don't profess to know them all. I'm not saying to anybody that I'm the only arbiter of facts and reality. All I'm saying is that a lot of the political discourse that we have in the country today is not really based on fact. And while I do agree that all sides commit that crime, it is not in equal measure. And I'm not sure anyone could ever convince me otherwise, because I do pay enough attention to know that where the facts get sacrificed is on the right side of the spectrum. And I don't mean right as incorrect. I mean on the right side, the conservative side. There are topics we do agree on. In fact, I was thrilled to hear agreement in Georgia by Tea Partiers and Sierra Club members about, you know, alternative energy sources. I'm not sure I'm too thrilled with motivation perhaps behind that agreement, but at least there's some agreement. And hopefully people who want to use renewable energy won't have to pay a premium for the privilege to do so. But I do think there's also agreement on topics like the corruption in government today. I don't think we always agree on why it's corrupt, perhaps. I don't think we always agree on where that corruption stems from, but I do think most people agree that it comes from the corrupting influence of money in politics. And that is something that corrupts both sides. There's no doubt about it, and there's no question in my mind. And then what's stopping you? Nothing stops me.
We know the answer to that question. That's like asking Janine if she takes part in transpartisan civil conversations with people. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's the easiest one to answer there.
Let's back up for a second, because I want to ask you a question about what you said about the Sierra Club and the Tea Partiers coming together, right? So first of all, were you on when Janine was on, and did you listen to the part of the discussion kind of near the end where we talked about the fact that there are like four or five flavors of the Tea Party?
Right.
Are you comfortable if somebody says I'm a Tea Partier going, oh, I know what you are and I know how you think? Extra time to find out?
I'd like to think that I don't jump to a conclusion as tempting as that is, because I am, in fact, aware of the strata that does seem to exist. And frankly, by virtue of the fact of, you know, of the conversations that I've gotten engaged in, both, you know, kind of in real conversation as well as online, and frankly, thanks to your show and other coffee party shows, it's clear to me that there's not just one flavor of Tea Partier. There's not one flavor of Republican. There's not one flavor of Democrat. I don't jump to the worst-case scenario, but I get pretty close, I have to admit it. If you're affiliated with the Tea Party today and you don't kind of immediately qualify that membership, then I don't think it's unfair for me to think, okay, well, this individual, first of all, is part of a movement that began when taxes were at historic lows. And to start a movement about being overtaxed at a time when taxes were at and still are at historic lows is silly. It's a front. You may have had good intentions when you got started, but I have my deep suspicions about that. I think there are other motivations at work in the Tea Party right from the very beginning, and they didn't have anything to do with taxes. I've been to Tea Party rallies. I've seen and heard what goes on there.
Yeah, right. So, well, I never liked that. I never liked the way either side discussed that issue, to be honest with you. I always thought, one side wants to talk about revenue and the other side wants to talk about spending. And as you and I, as normal people, okay, maybe that's not the right word, as intelligent business people know that if you're running a business, there's two ways you can increase profits. You can lower your costs, which is what the Republicans are always talking about. Let's lower our spending. Or I could raise revenues, right? I could figure out a way to bring in more money, right? But you can't do either in a vacuum. And the fact that both sides always seem to just be talking about one thing, right, about one side, it just irritates me no end. And it's like, I want value for my dollar. And the fact of the matter is that maybe they just chose poor, maybe this was just poor wording on their part. Because the fact is that if your taxes, if you feel your taxes are not being spent well, then the kind of, I think the knee-jerk reaction, the easy reaction is to say, well, I want to pay less taxes. I want value for my money. Right? Instead of saying, I want value for my money, which is what I think everybody should be saying. My mantra, it's like it's not about big government or small government. It's about good government. Good government gives you services for what you pay. We pay huge taxes here in the state of Oregon. Huge. The real estate taxes in Portland are humongous. But we get great services. I don't mind paying them because I've got light rail and I've got buses and I've got the purest drinking water that comes out of a tap anywhere in the world. I've got all these good stuff, so I don't mind. So I kind of understand, though, if somebody feels they're getting ripped off, saying, I don't really feel like paying that.
Well, I think it's really easy to create a straw man argument that pins the blame squarely on government and squarely on what it is that we pay in taxes. Without, like you just said, taking into account where those funds are going, what they are providing to us in terms of a civil society, and what we should be doing or thinking about when it comes to where should we be spending those tax dollars. I'm all for cutting expenses, especially in places like the military.
And you probably don't. Exactly. Now, see, we've hit gold. We've hit pay dirt. We just hit pay dirt. So if that person sits across the table from you at the coffee shop and says, I'm sick and tired of paying these taxes and the government wastes my money, then you look at them and say, well, the biggest budget number by far. I mean, I can't remember what percent it represents. You probably will look it up faster than I can even ask you the question is, what percent of the federal budget is military? I mean, it's huge. It's stupidly huge. So ask them, well, are you for getting out of the wars and downsizing our military? And if they say yes, did you not just find something in common with that person?
One would hope that would be a common, yes, that would be some of the common ground. However, I don't think I'm going out on too big of a limb to suggest that in large part, A lot of the extreme conservative position on expense is about what I really think is a pejorative, and I don't use the term entitlement, it's the social safety net program. People who even live in red states who are the greatest beneficiaries of federal tax largesse when it comes to social safety net programs believe that somehow there's nothing but takers and moochers on those programs, and that it's inconceivable that we would drop our guard and become some second-rate power in the world by cutting a defense budget that is bigger than the next 15 defense budgets in the world, all of whom happen to be our allies, and only China, who represents any sort of potential geopolitical threats. It's those kinds of talking points that are the most frustrating when you do try to get into that level of detail. So while I think everybody would agree that the federal government spends more than it should, it's what it gets spent on that ought to be, you have to get to that next level of the conversation. And so I would like to add to that list things like corporate subsidies or fossil fuel companies. There's absolutely no reasonable explanation as to why
the most profitable corporations in the world today ought to also be getting tax breaks, also ought to be getting subsidies to operate out of my tax dollars.
This is where I need the Tea Party. This is where I need my Tea Party friends, because I am telling you that if you sit across the table and you talk corporate subsidies or crony capitalism, no bid contracts to companies like Halliburton or whatnot, they're right there with you, man. There's no way they're going to say, "Oh yeah, we've got to give rich people money."
I mean, Dan, you and I both know that the people who self-identify as Tea Partiers, for the most part, and in the grassroots, would agree with those kinds of statements. I've had that kind of conversation, that kind of agreement with those folks. That there is hope for that sort of thing. It's one of the reasons why I continue to make money in politics kind of that one thing that I think we can all center our efforts and attention around. That would be a start. Now, I would suggest that it's going to get tricky. If we can get money out of politics and we can turn our political system into a multi-party system and we can handle things like waste, fraud, and abuse and debt and things like that that everybody worries about, we're still going to find ourselves at the end of the day having some pretty difficult conversations around those next set of issues.
No doubt about it. But the fact is that here's the thing, and this is a realization I came to. I had one of those sit up in bed the other night moments, and I went, I see the problem. I get it. And that is this. When we talk about people who affiliate or relate to a specific party, like we have tonight, right? When we talk about a Tea Party or somebody who's a Tea Party supporter, somebody who's a Republican supporter, Democrats, whatever it is, and then we look at – I think what happens is, and I find myself doing this, I tend to judge their beliefs based on the way their representatives act in Washington, D.C., when we know that's not the fact. We know that the average Joe Tea Partier does not have a big enough checkbook to write a check, at least one that won't bounce, that is going to make his congressperson stand up and take note of what he wants. And I think that's got to be that's to me is the new message for me, is what do you want, and then what is your representative doing for you? What are the people in your party who are in Washington, D.C., are they doing for you? And that's the only way that I can get to the fact that we have a single-digit approval rating for Congress, is that what people want, they're not getting because they don't feel they're represented. So does it really matter what party you affiliate with and who you vote for if they're only going to go there and do whatever the corporatists want them to?
Right.
That's how I think we form that grassroots movement. That's how I think we congeal at the people level and say, look, it doesn't matter. We could sit there and say we want free ice cream and cake for everyone, and everybody could agree on that. You're not going to get it in Washington unless Bank of America says, hey, I give those people free ice cream and cake.
Well, and I do hold out hope. That the idea of crony capitalism and corporatocracy and money in politics is that one single rallying point that everyone across the spectrum can get around. The tricky part is going to be like with the guy from Atlanta, the suburb who's running in a really red area. He can't do it without money.
Hang on, because Patrick's still on the line, and I'm going to go ahead and bring him back in here, and let's talk about that, because that's obviously the crux of the matter here. So Patrick, you're back with us. Are you good to talk?
Absolutely. So,
all right.
So I'm probably one of the few guys, and I did meet a few this past run. I'm one of the few people running around the country who refuses to fundraise. I do not take money from anybody. Lobbies, I don't take it from unions, I don't take it from anybody. the clubs, the organization. I just look, I'm running to be a public servant. I'm not here to raise money. As soon as I take money, whether you say you are or not, you're beholden for something.
Right.
So why are we continuing to support people that just raise unbelievable amounts of money? And the way I ran, I have to say, the way I've run before, people said, oh, you're nuts. You're crazy. You can't run without money. You got to have money. And I would just say back to them, why? What am I here to serve the public, or am I here to raise money? What is the purpose? And I would talk
realistically, I have to ask you, Patrick, realistically, isn't there an amount low enough that, you know, if somebody just gave you $10, you would go, okay, thanks, and it really wouldn't, you really wouldn't owe that person, would you? I mean, isn't there some minimum amount or maximum amount?
No, you miss what I'm saying. So I don't take it from organizations. I will take an individual's money because I can pay, you know, I may have standard costs like business cards or, you know, I also don't believe in litter on stick. I won't buy the litter on stick either. So, but I do have some basic stuff I got to buy for. The media won't cover you unless you buy an ad here or there. I buy very few ads. And again, the media continues to report on people. And I actually got a story out of it in this last run because I complained about how the media compared candidates by how much money they raised. Like that was the net worth of that candidate was how much money they were. And you hear it every time. Somebody's running for something. Look at your local elections. So-and-so, oh, they look at the public record and go, oh, so-and-so has been able to raise, oh, my God, look at that, $2 million more than their opponent. They must be worth something. Wow, people are putting money over there. I mean, it's the biggest joke. And I proved that last time by getting in my ultra-red conservative place, home of Newt Gingrich. I got 33% of the vote in a place where I don't have that Democrat.
So you got 30? You said you got 33% of the popular vote?
Yes.
How did I not know that?
Yeah, I stole from the other side because people
that's extremely impressive, Patrick.
People like that message, and I'll go back with that message again and again because I believe we need. And I met some candidates like this last time. We were kind of a small group of people out there saying, "Enough is enough. You've got to start calling it and saying, stop running, stop raising money."
Yeah, the only difficulty that I can see with that, Patrick, is that your average voter either goes to the first name on the ballot or to somebody whose name he recognizes down ballot. And media is what gets you that name recognition. There's an old saying, it doesn't matter what they say about you as long as they spell the name right.
Yeah, so I challenge the media.
Right.
What does the media exist for?
Get the word out.
I will call them and say, you want to have a coffee? Let's go have coffee. I'm in the coffee party. Let's go have a coffee together.
Yeah.
I kept getting more. I tell you, the way more and more media was covering me was they would send me a survey, and they would say, you know, oh, I got a deadline come up tomorrow. Can you just answer these questions for me, and I'll write a story about it?
Actually, I can't, and that's news.
Well, I ended up writing my own stories that way. I'm like, oh, okay, thanks a lot. I'll write my own story. And a lot of them wrote word for word what I put in. They didn't lift a finger to change anything, offer anything. So I wrote my own stories that way. And a lot of times it was embarrassing because I was writing about how the media is not truly covering our candidacies. They're really not
interesting. Interesting strategy.
Yes.
Okay.
It can work. It is going to take a lot more of us, though. It's going to take a lot of people actually doing this. And someday, some candidates
are
going to win.
Well, I can tell you this. I hope you can pick up the 17% plus one that would get Phil Gingrey out of there.
Well, he's gone. I've successfully run two two hardcore people out of office. So Gingrich's running now for Saxby Chambliss's congressional seat, which has opened a vacuum. There's already six Republicans running for the 11th district. One of them is a guy from the past that Dan will know, Mr. Bob Barr.
Oh, no way.
I know exactly who he is.
Yes,
Bob Barr is the 2008 nominee of the Libertarian Party for president.
Exactly. And he made his announcement because he's on the NRA board of directors.
Uh-huh.
He made his announcement at the local gun store in Marietta, which is where that gun store was responsible for sales of 40 handguns to a fugitive's wife in New York City and was traced to an unbelievable number of murders in New York City because of the way our gun laws are with no background checks. We're just a gun shop for the world. This is where he chooses to make his announcement.
So my recollection was that Barr came right after Gingrich. His rise to the power was right after Gingrich, and it was amazing because I had just moved my very dyed-in-the-wool Democrat blue wife from Chicago to that district. And I remember that just when we got rid of Newt and thought it couldn't get any farther to the right, then Barr came in and made Newt look like, you know, Kennedy.
Yeah, he's out there. And he's been very vocal with he's been following Ted Cruz and Palin around every time there's any kind of, you know, tea disturbance in the world. He's there. He's sort of like the Jesse Jackson of the tea world. Anything happens, he's there. Doesn't do anything, but he's there. He was one of the first guys on the I can't believe you closed the World War II memorial. Oh my God. And he was doing the same thing here, of course, with our Civil War battlefield, Kennesaw. He was out there with a small band of people. Same kind of deal. Just anything to get attention.
Well, somebody please tell me you still can't get a Sarah Palin bump. Well, listen, guys, as always, we start to have these fun conversations just in time for the show to end. So I'm going to shut it down, but I'd like to give everybody a last chance for some parting thoughts on transpartisanship and figuring out how to bring people together, be it to, you know, get a fairer tax code, be it to get money out of politics, whatever it is. So let's start with the first shall be last and last first. Mr. Woodward, what say you?
Mr. Woodburn.
Woodburn.
Says,
God, did it again. Okay, thank you. Thank you. I apologize.
It's okay. It's all right. One day I'll help Scott Armstrong write a book, and then you'll really have a problem. Anyway, what I was going to say is I think the best solution is just to create your own talking points on the issue rather than following anybody's party line, including the coffee party's party line, if there is one, on talking points. If you're giving people your own ideas, then they can think rather than walk in lockstep.
I love it. Makes total sense. All right. Thanks, Bob.
All righty. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, man.
I'm gonna yield the floor.
Okay. I think next
bye
would
for
be...
now, everybody. Coffee party on.
Bye, Bob. Woodburn.
Bye for now. Yeah.
I always want to make believe that I've got, like, you know, the world famous journalist calling into my show, Bob
yes.
Woodward. But you know, you're
and
the
happy
man.
Happy Hanukkah
you're...
too.
Oh, thank you, sir. Mr. Thompson.
Yes, from the great prison state of Georgia. We started as a prison state here for the poor, wretched souls from Europe. We are we are fastly going back there. We have more incarcerated people in the state and the union because we're paying our private prisons to fill up the beds.
Oh, boy. Well, good luck to you in your run-up to the election, and hope to hear from you often in the next coming year.
Get the money out of politics.
Yes, sir. We're working on that. Thank you very much. Patrick Thompson from the suburbs of Atlanta. Mr. Russick, you shall have the final word. Well, actually, you won't. I will get it, but that's okay.
Yeah. Hey, another great show, always engaging and informative. I want to share two URLs with everybody who's listening and who will hear this later. My two favorites, besides the coffee party, of course, is anticorruptionact.org and represent.us. If you want to really do something to get money out of politics, it's the simplest thing in the world. Some really smart people like Lawrence Lessig, even Jack Abramoff, have put their heads together along with former FEC Chairman Trevor Potter, come up with the American Anti-Corruption Act. All you need to do to support it is to become a citizen co-sponsor. These guys get a million citizen co-sponsors, and they're going to take it to the street. They're going to take it to the Hill, actually. And they're going to force Congress to take a stand either for or against it. And those who are against it are going to get elected out of office because there will be that much groundswell to get secret and dark money out of our political process. Anticorruptionact.org, represent.us. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. That's Greg Russick. People are always asking me, when is Greg going to become your co-host? I always ask Greg, and Greg keeps putting me off. I don't think I'm offering him enough money or the right billing or something. I don't know. But sooner or later, we'll figure that one out. But you have been listening for the past couple of hours to Press One for Democracy. My name is Dan Aronson. I am here every Monday night starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific time. It has been 2 hours, and it has been a lot of fun. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. here on the West Coast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon. Same place you can hear Lunch with Loudon at Thursdays at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And on Saturdays, you've got Egberto Willis with Politics Done Right. And then you have we also have our brand new Coffee Party radio show, which is a progressive politics Tennessee style on Sundays starting at 5. So for Dan Aronson, this is Dan Aronson for Dan Aronson. I am for myself. Why not? Sure. I work hard at it. I deserve it. But no, this is Dan Aronson. And we hope you've enjoyed the show. And as Janine Loudon would say, and in my homage to her, coffee party on.